I'm hopeful you'll be able to understand me with that distortion. What you're listening to is that TechNet, number 1,232, which started way back in 1982. The TechNet is a gathering of amateur radio operators who hopefully have got some smart on how to make this hobby more fun, how to get more pleasure out of our transmitters, receivers, antennas, towers, feed lines, propagation, and the 26 or 27 different kinds of ham radio. Some exciting things happened this week, like a crash of two satellites, and the antenna issue of QST Magazine, and other things that we'll be discussing tonight. The subjects that we discuss on the TechNet, most of the time, are the subjects that you guys bring, the questions you ask. Not too often do Mel and Dick have a prepared show. Occasionally, Mel has a special on say, for instance, how do decibels work and how does the Smith chart work. And occasionally I have an unofficial special on how do antennas work, my favorite subject. But for the most part, whatever we discuss is what you guys bring to the net. A person signs into the TechNet by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and you follow that with the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in would sound like this, KE2EJ, Eric, and yes. Eric is one of our very frequently sign-ins because he's the chief engineer of two of the local broadcast television stations. So do we have any check-ins tonight? Please give me a call letters and name at this time. K2RIW listening.
K2YO, Bernie, no.
WHYY, Joe, yes.
Yes. Good evening, all. K2KEY.
Okay, so far we got Bernie, no. Joe, yes. And Mel with a yes. Anyone else?
Bob West, who I'm with the space report.
Yeah, we're going to be listening to that space report, Paul. As you know, two satellites crashed. Big doings. And it's been predicted for a long time, and it finally happened. After 55 years of space travel, we finally had two things crash. Let's hope it doesn't happen every 55 years. Anyone else with a check-in? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
KP2EMA, Rob, yes.
Bob, first.
Mobile, Bob.
Okay, mobile, stand by a minute. Bob, your audio is quite low. Give me your call letters one more time, Bob.
KP2EMA.
Is that Echo Mike Alpha?
That's correct. Kilo Charlie 2, Echo Mike Alpha.
Okay, we got you, Bob. The mobile, was that a yes or no? What's your name and call letters, mobile? Go ahead.
Good evening. WB2QGZ mobile. Bill, no question.
Never heard of you. Okay, Bill. Let's hope you really have a question for us, Bill. Like hearing from you. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
Okay, see you.
Okay, that last person is going to have to talk a little bit faster and a little bit slower. Give me call letters and name.
It's N2GOT, help. And no questions at this time.
N2GOT, and I think you said Hal. And the machine is in a troubled mode tonight. And it's chopping things out for people who modulate a little heavily. Anyone else?
KC2MDP, Steve, no questions.
Okay, Steve with an O. Anyone else?
2KIQ, just with a short question.
I think you said KC2KIQ with a short question. Correct me on the call letters. And what is your name, sir?
This is K2KYQ. The handle is Joe.
I think KYQ, you said your name is Joe, J-O-E. Anyone else? Okay, more than enough to get started. The first real question tonight seems to be Joe number one, W-H-R-Y-Y. And how have all of your experiments with digital television been going, Joe? You got the floor.
I haven't been doing any more experiments, Dick. Good evening. Everything's put up. Everything seems to work. I can get most of the channels in New York. Actually, very funny thing, last week there must have been a temperature inversion because I was able to get channel 13 on digital channel 61 for quite a while, and it was very amazing to watch that. picked up a VHF digital television carrier. That's that was. I haven't identified that one yet. Maybe that's part of my question. I might ask a little later on to KE2AJ if he knows how to know the what the station happens to be. My question is: does anybody make a digital modulator for home use that you can use to inject a signal onto a cable system that you can be that could be picked up on one of these digital type television converters? I know that for years they've made analog, low-power analog modulators. You put the video and audio in, and you get a modulated signal out anywhere from, say, channel, say, 14 through 69, somewhere down on UHF or somewhere in that range. Does anybody currently make a digital model of that, where one of these digital converters will be able to pick it up, you could be able to introduce it into your system?
Let me make sure I understand what you're asking now, Joe. I think you're asking, has anyone made a digital set of converters, boxes, integrated circuits, or whatever, so that a ham radio operator can experiment with digital television transmission? Did I understand you correctly on that one, Joe? Go ahead.
Not completely. Not to take it and send it over the air, to basically put it on a closed cable system. They make modulators right now where you can, they're low power modulators, they put out in TV language, maybe they put out like plus 10 dBm or something like that out of the output jack, and you can introduce that into your television system if you want to take like a video feed from a remote camera or something like that and introduce it into your system and be able to go to that channel on, say, a UHF preset UHF channel and watch something coming out of the camera. For example, I know they make analog ones. They've been making them for quite a while. Does anybody make a digital model of that, if anybody knows, that's compatible or could be decoded by a current DTV type of decoder? I guess you'd call it what, 8BSC type of modulation, if I got the term right?
Yes, you do have the time term right. It is called 8BSB, 8 digital subband or sidebands, I think it's called. I'm coming through the Eastern input, and it's taking a little bit of time for me to get used to the delay. Hopefully Eric or Bill will know about the chips that are available for you to transmit digital television over cable. I guess you're trying to ship certain kinds of signals through the cable system of a house or a building, is my first guess. Now, it is my belief, Joe, and correct me on this, that a modern-day television set, which has the capability of receiving digital television, also has the ability to receive analog television. So in other words, if you tell it to go to channel 22, and it goes to that frequency range, I believe it has enough smarts to know how to demodulate either a digital or an analog signal that appears on that frequency region. So, unless you need all of the extra quality of the digital television, on the assumption that you might have some difficulty finding digital chips, would you be able to send an analog signal over that cable system and be able to receive it on the other end and fulfill your needs? Drag your feet when I send it back to you to see if Eric or Bill or anyone else knows of chips that are available that'll generate digital television format. And if nothing, pick up Joe and let me know what you think about what I just mentioned. W-A-2-R-Y-Y with the delay. K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. I am currently doing something like that right now. I have a cheap RF modulator. I had it in use for a couple of years. That's exactly what I'm doing, is putting different signals from either a sat receiver or a remote camera, and I can put them on two different channels on the cable system and be able to watch them from multiple TV sets, which all are analog in the case of myself. It just becomes a little bit of a problem if I have to turn off the modulator and then go to the proper UHF channel. I would like to include it within the DTV array of things it could pick up. I know it's kind of new, but maybe somebody knows of some company that's either start experimenting or has made something like this already for home type of use. I certainly wouldn't want to try transmit something like this over the air, but I just want to keep it on a closed system. The analog ones work okay. The picture is maybe not the best quality of what you want to see, because it becomes a little bit of a problem. Because it's not you don't get the greatest clarity out of the thing because it gets the bandwidth out of these things. It's not like a regular studio transmission that you're looking at. So maybe you might end up getting a resolution rate of 200, 300 lines maximum, something that you get out of a core modulator, out of a VCR or something like that. They resemble that kind of signal quality signal out of a cheap VCR. It's not really the best. That's why I was asking about if somebody had made a digital comparable digital model.
Now, I was hoping Eric would come in and know about that. I think I have been hearing about the availability of chips, and I believe some of the more progressive amateurs in California have been experimenting with digital television transmitting over the air. So it's coming. Even if those chips are not available today, I think it's only a short period of time before they will be available. As Eric checks in later on, or anyone else who has information on this, I'd like to believe we're going to get an answer to that one later on, Joe. Anything else before we go over to the next guy? W-H-U-R-Y-Y, K-Q-R-I-W in the TechNet.
Oh, sure, the second one is a good one. Maybe you've made something like this in the past with tinkering with your parts in your parts house there and so forth. Maybe not. I know you can take a field strength meter. This is an HF topic, which of course you love. I know you can take a field strength meter and simply use it to peak your antenna signal coming out of your antenna. But the problem with something like that is if you had RF leaking partially from your transmitter and partially coming to your antenna, you really couldn't tell where it was coming from. Have you ever made or ever heard of a project where somebody's made something like that but made it remotely where you could put the thing outside or quite a ways away from your transmitter where the predominant amount of RF current thing would be sensing, would be truly coming from your antenna and actually give you a good indication of how much radiated energy you had coming out of your antenna, not in a measurement form to know like the thing would be calibrated, but just basically like a maximum type of thing. And something that would be pretty much broadband that would cover any ways you want to go from, say, 160 through 10 meters or maybe even higher. Anything like that ever been done?
Okay, I've done something a little bit close to that, Joe. Like you, I was worried about maximizing the signal really coming out of my antenna, a field strength meter used in the shack, simultaneously picking up the signal radiated by the antenna and also picking up any leakage from the transmitter that was only a foot or two away. One approach I did use is to put the field strength meter in the backyard, far away from the transmitter in the shack, but well into the field of the antenna, and then look at the meter movement with a set of binoculars. Not an ideal solution, but that's one way to go. Another way to go would be to take the meter movement wiring with a twisted pair, bring it back to the shack and have the meter in the shack. A third approach would be a real telemetry approach, and I was well beyond the talking phase of building a remote field strength telemetering device where it would either convert the signal strength into a tone that got transmitted back, or in the modern day world, it would convert it into a digital word that got transmitted back over something like wireless local area network 802.11 and whatever. So there's lots of ways you can do that. But here's what I discovered, Joe. When the meter in the backyard, when I was watching it with binoculars, was maximized, I found out that the bird watt meter in the shack showed the exact same maximum. If I had some kind of a simple voltage detector on the coaxial cable that goes to the antenna, whenever I peaked any of the tuning and loading controls of the transmitter, so that the voltage on the coax was maximum, that was the point of best power output to the antenna. I know that sounds crazy because the way the coaxial cable or the feed line does some impedance inverting and all kinds of funny things, you would think that maximizing the voltage in the shack might not necessarily be the maximum signal at the antenna. I can tell you it is. The problem of remotely sensing what you're really transmitting is not as bad as you think. As long as your meter in the shack is well enough shielded and you can measure any method of seeing forward power or maximum voltage on your transmission line, you are maximizing the power.
Repeater.
I think there is no exception to that one, Joe. So I wonder if that makes any sense so far. Now, the only other good reason for having a remote meter, and the more remote the better,
would be the feedback signal strength as you rotate your antenna. And now you have the ability to plot the pattern of your antenna. Well, I used to do that in the backwards manner. Because of the law of reciprocity, whatever pattern and gain you get out of an antenna, front-to-back ratio, front-to-side ratio, all of those parameters, will be identical on transmit and receive. So I would calibrate my receiver, take the automatic gain control voltage out of the receiver, put it through an operational amplifier system into a strip chart recorder, and I calibrated the whole system. Then I had people in various directions send me a key down signal for a couple of minutes while I rotated the antenna. So I measured the pattern of my antenna in the receive mode, and I can guarantee you that the pattern you get out of your antenna in the receive mode and the pattern you get out in the transmit mode is the identical pattern. W2LYY, KQLIW.
Okay, sounds good, but it doesn't sound like something you've built as a complete project where, you know, it could be taken in with plans that are documented already and just build it up. I understand. Okay, you can go to the next guy.
There are things you can buy, Joe, for a sight-impaired person, which will give you tones to tell you when you're maximizing the power output of any kind of an indicator, a volt-ohm, milliammeter, field strength meter, whatever. It wouldn't be too difficult to set up a field strength meter into one of those tone generators, voltage to frequency converter is what it really is, and then by various means send that tone back. Now, that would be a qualitative answer, not a quantitative answer. You tune for the maximum pitch of tone to know you get maximum power. And I'll admit that calibrating it so that a particular tone represented a certain number of watts or volts per meter would be a little bit more difficult. So some of the circuitry you're looking for does exist, but the whole product, the whole package, I don't think so. So once again, before we leave, Joe, is there anyone who knows of converters or integrated circuit chips that will allow him to put a digital television signal onto a coaxial cable in an RF manner, or even in a video manner, but still other chips that will give us the 8VSB format of modern-day digital television? Do we know of any of those chips being available? Give me your call letters right now, K2RIW and the TechNet. Looks like nobody at this time, Joe, but when the other guys check in later on, we'll be looking for that. I think the next person who signed in was Bernie, K2 Yankee Oscar, I think it was. Bernie, what would you like to ask the TechNet tonight? K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Good evening, Dick. Bernie, K2YO. The answer was no on this end.
Shows you what kind of a note-taker I am, Bernie. Okay. I think the next person with a yes might have been Bob. KC2 Echo Mike Alpha. Go right ahead, Bob.
Before I ask my question, I just like to make sure I'm still within range of the repeater. How do I sound? KC2 EMA.
I'm pretty good. I'm hearing you with earphones, so go right ahead, Bob. And if need be, I'll repeat your question.
All right. I apologize if my question is off topic for the net, but I am soon to be the president of a wireless club at my college, and I am looking for a project to get about 20 or 30 hands started in experimenting and building things for amateur radio. My club seems to be pretty dead right now. And I'd like to get them started something. I was wondering if anybody had any good ideas for an experimenting project or a building project that might be a little bit outside of what would normally take place. I apologize again if it's off topic. KC2ENI.
Very fine. For those who are hearing the TechNet tonight, the TechNet is a little bit troubled because the receiver has a problem that Andy is working on. The discriminator makes some distortion. You're hearing my audio coming through the back door of the repeater by way of the 975-375 Selden repeater. When I put my voice on the other repeater, which I'll give you an example of it right now, you'll see that my voice is a lot more distorted when I come through the direct manner. So I'm going to go back through the indirect manner where the voice sounds a little bit better. So Bernie's question is that he is involved with a group of ham radio operators at his college, 20 or 30 hams, and he's looking for a worthwhile project for 20 or 30 hams that will keep them enthralled, be educational, be fun and whatever. I can think of things that I'd like to do, like antenna design, but that wouldn't be appropriate for 20 or 30 guys. You want to keep it simple and yet it not be Mickey Mouse. You want it to be something that's worthwhile. That's a toughie. Anybody got any suggestions for what Bob is looking for? Give us your call letters right now. If you were leading a group of guys in a college and they were looking for a worthy project, what would you suggest to them?
K2KEY.
Recognized. Anyone else?
K2KYQ.
Okay. 2EJ coming through the Eastern repeater. Got him also. Okay, so Mel first, K2KEY. What would those very progressive guys from the Kings County Radio Club, what would they do in a situation like this, Mel? You got the floor.
Okay, very interesting project to work on is a number of these QRP transceivers. We had a little challenge a few years ago was to put together a transmitter or a transceiver, and it had to be done by all salvage parts from junk TVs and VCRs, etc. So that was an interesting challenge. And but now there are some very good kits or semi-kits, and to complete the kit and see who can achieve some of the best results, both on the receive end and the transmit end, and throw out a lot of ideas on what you can do. You'll be amazed at some of the QRPers, what they've been able to achieve as far as quality of a transceiver, a homebrew transceiver. It's a very interesting, you know, project to get involved with because there's so many ways to go, Dick. Over.
Now, back in the days when you had EastKit, there's some beautiful things you could buy that had guaranteed performance. EastKit, Benton Harbor, Michigan, they're gone. Night kits, they're gone. I don't know of any kits that you can buy nowadays of a receiver or a transceiver. So I think you're saying you would be advocating a scratch build. In other words, start off with somebody's pretty good schematic diagram or an article out of QEX, the Experimenters Exchange, and duplicate it. So where would you start on deciding what to build when there are so few kits available these days? And I guess there are kits being sold in Australia, aren't there? And maybe in Europe. So which, if it was a kit that you're advocating, Mel, which kit and what country or what brand name would you go to? K2KEY, K2RIW.
Radio, receiver.
People have opinions. Oh, yes, there's a number of kits around. Oh, and it's far from being dead that there are a number of nice kits around. They range anywhere from very, very reasonably priced, very few bucks, up to like $1,000 or more. Depends on how sophisticated you want to go. And building from scratch, you go to the QRP, you just Google QRP, and you'll see a tremendous amount of information on it. It's far from being a abandoned end of the hobby, Dick, just because, you know, unfortunately we haven't got companies like EastKit anymore or a couple of the others, but there's still plenty of it out there, Dick. Over.
Another nice thing to consider is that there are quite a few transistors that'll put out more than enough power for QRP. The usual definition of QRP is less than 5 watts. So a 5 watt transmitter is a considerable good way to go. Alrighty, I'm going to go to Joe next, KYQ. After that, KE2EJ signed in. I heard N2EO after that, and I think there's another person. We'll pick you all up in order. Joe, K2KYQ, go right ahead with your suggestion.
Good evening, Dick. This is K2KYQ, and this is kind of off the subject just slightly. On the way home tonight, I keep seeing every evening an extremely bright star. I know you guys talk about these things later on in the evening, but it looks like a star. It could be a planet. It might be even a satellite. It's bright enough, and it sits off in the west by northeast area. And at first I thought it was stationary because it seemed to be there all the time, but I just looked out now, and I see it dropping down towards the western horizon there. Can you tell me what that might be, if you would?
Venus. There's a small fee involved. Just here, Joe. Yes, you're looking at the planet Venus. Venus is right now in one of its brightest phases, and it's also timed such that it's an evening star. And if you made some careful measurements, you would say it's moving at 15 degrees per hour, and that's exactly how fast the Earth rotates. Once every 24 hours is very close to 15 degrees per hour. And Venus, I forget the exact number, but I think it's something like minus 6 on the star magnitude scale. It's a very bright object. I believe it is the brightest object in the sky other than the Sun first and the Moon second. Venus third, and I think Jupiter is fourth in that order. And then Saturn, and then probably the star Sirius. So you're looking at Venus, and if you pick up any issue of Astronomy Magazine or Sky and Telescope, unfortunately the ones that are on the newsstand right now are probably the March or the April issue. They're always a couple of months ahead. But they got this beautiful centerfold that'll show you exactly where everything is at various hours of the night. According to a report that we had a couple of weeks ago, there have been a couple of situations in past years where pilots were fooled into thinking that during wartime, Venus was some kind of a weapon system being directed at them. So I think the International Telescope Year is coming up. This is the 200th anniversary of the birth of Galileo. So the astronomical clubs have a motivation or a goal this year to have 50% of the population or better look through a telescope. So you take, for instance, the Astley Club on Long Island, Astronomical Society of Long Island, and many other clubs like the Custer Institute out in Southold. They were going to be holding multiple meetings in which members will be setting up telescopes in various places like schoolyards and parks and whatever, and maybe even at Jones Beach. And they want to give as many people as possible the opportunity to look through a telescope
repeater
and look at things like... they want you to look through a telescope and look at things like Venus, Jupiter, Saturn, Mars, lots of things to look at. The Orion Nebula and so on, star clusters. So you should have some opportunity in the next few months, Joe, to look through a telescope free of charge. And you might even be enthralled with that hobby, and you might be out there buying binoculars and telescopes. K2, KYQ, K2LIW.
Well, thank you very much. I'm ashamed to say I would never have known. I do have a 7x50 pair of binoculars, and we're going to take a look at it. Hopefully I'll catch it before it sets tonight. Thank you, guys. Good night, Dick. K2, KYQ.
Now, one of the things you'll discover, Joe, if you go to Sky and Telescope Magazine, just Google Sky and Telescope, and when you get to Sky and Telescope Magazine, and with a little bit of hunting around, you'll find a series of articles as to what your first astronomical instrument should be. And one of the strong recommendations is a good set of binoculars, with or without a tripod-like device that can hold the binoculars. You can get four times more resolution out of binoculars if they're being held by something other than your hands. A good set of binoculars can give you a lot of pleasure because you're getting a stereo view of the sky. And then beyond that, people will buy a larger aperture type telescope. But be careful, and you'll find this out when you read the introductory articles in Sky and Telescope. Gain is not the main number. Turns out people who advertise telescopes will brag that it's got a zillion-to-one gain. But the answer is something like 60 per inch is the absolute maximum.
In other words, if you had a telescope with a 2-inch diameter mirror in the front, 2 times 60 is 120. 120 gain is the absolute maximum you can use, and you'll find that even that number is not pleasurable. The picture is already becoming fuzzy. Probably using 60 gain on a 2-inch scope would be the maximum you are likely to use with pleasure. So don't be fooled by the advertisement on the box of the telescope that says, hey, this scope has got a zillion to one gain. That's not what counts. And beyond that, I imagine there must be a consumer's report and articles that appear from time to time in both Astronomy Magazine and Sky and Telescope that'll rate the cost effectiveness and quality of the various optical instruments you're likely to buy. You can start showing up to the astronomy meetings that are held every single Wednesday at the Hayden Planetarium. Correction, here we go. The Vanderbilt Planetarium in Centerport, starting at 8:30 every single Wednesday. They hold meetings there, and you just show up and sit and listen to their display, talk to the members, look at the hardware that they bring along periodically, and you'll get first-hand experience by those 150 members as to... what's the right kind of instrument to buy. Quite a few of those members are now into astrophotography by way of charge-coupled device cameras. Some of the modern-day charge-coupled device connected to the eyepiece of a telescope can give you about 10 times more sensitivity than a human eye and give you some beautiful color pictures of anything you want to take pictures of through that telescope. A fun hobby, and consider it. I can tell you've got some interest in it. Okay, now the next person who signed it, I think it was Eric, KE2EJ, and as you can tell because of the distortion on the western receiver tonight, I'm going through the eastern input, Eric. KE2EJ, what would you suggest to Bob's students, K2LIW? Okay, I'm not hearing Eric right now. I think the next person signed in with a suggestion was Rich, N2EO. Go right ahead, Rich.
Okay, Jack, N2EO1. The subject of kits, Pentek has a line of QRP transceivers for about $90. They put out, about 2.5 watts. They got the single band units for 80, 40, 30, 20 meters. I believe they have 17 and 15, I'm not sure. But I would say probably to start off a 40 meter kit. They've got a small pistol lattice filter in them. They're very nice. They use a VXO tuned oscillator. And I built a number of them. They work very well. They're about $90 a kit for them. Go on the TedTech.com website.
That's a darn good suggestion, Rich. TenTech arguably is the best ham radio company left in the United States, located in Tennessee. So I guess you figure out that their name, TenTech, is a contraction of Tennessee Technology. And just about anybody who has built any of their products or bought any of their products says very glowing things about that company. So they really like it. Good suggestion. So when Rob goes there to that particular website, I think he's going to see quite a few opportunities. I think there was someone else who wanted to sign in. Would that person try again? Give me your call letters and name with a suggestion for Bob as to what his 30 students should try to do as a kid. K2RIW listening. Okay, that person's voice was very low. Give it to me again. I'm going to listen on three different inputs and see if I can fill you out of the noise. Go ahead. Okay, you're going to have to give me a lot more audio. Eat that microphone and try again. I wonder if anyone else heard those call letters. Yeah, unfortunately, the signal is very weak, the audio is very low, and the receiver tonight is very distorted on the western input. So that combination now apparently is going to fight you. Give it one more try. Don't shout quite so loud. Normal audio volume. Speak slowly, phonetically. Let's see if we can pull out your call letters. Go right ahead. K2RIW. My name is Dick.
WZUTTT. What's one of the other guys?
Okay, Gordon, apparently you heard whoever the other person was. Tango. Go right ahead.
Who's the unidentified station that you were alluded to before? Anyway, good evening. I just ran upstairs with a heavy load of equipment. Anyway, what I wanted to suggest was was some of the software-defined radio stuff. There's a whole mess of stuff that Tony Parks has come out with and his team. And it's relatively inexpensive. They make a general coverage receiver. It's awesome. They make various QRP rigs. You know, but if you go to the Soft Rock 40 Yahoo group, you can find a lot of information out there. I think that'd be a dynamite set of projects, because not everybody has to do exactly the same thing, but the core software is the same, and I think that would be of interest, depending on whether someone's licensed or not, you'd have something for them to do.
Okay, sounds like an excellent suggestion. So the Soft Rock Yahoo group is into software-defined radios. The very progressive electronic RF enthusiasts are saying that 5 years from now, more than 50% of us will be using software-defined radios. So the right kind of a marriage of computing and microprocessing and RF circuitry gives you the best of all possible worlds. So Gordon's suggestion, that's a good one. W2 Tango is the guy who made that suggestion. So Bob, as you can see, we have more possibilities than I thought. I'm kind of glad to find out. KC2, Echo Mike Alpha. I am curious what college you're associated with where these 20 or 30 people are going to be building this great circuitry. K2RIW listening. My name is Dick.
Am I still holding the
repeater? KC2 EMA.
I heard KC2 EMA. We'll be picking you up in a second. Bob, yes, you're coming through the repeater reasonably well to me with a set of earphones on. The machine does have a moderate amount of distortion tonight, as you can tell. KC2, Echo Mike Alpha. Oh! I suddenly realized you're the same guy. Go right ahead, Bob.
Thanks. I'm actually in Connecticut now, in Stamford, to say well. I am actually going back to my school. I am a student at Worcester Polytechnic Institute. The club is the WTI Wireless Association, call is W1YK. We will be celebrating our 100th anniversary this year, and I'm just trying to get some projects going to get some life back in the club. It seems to be fading away rather slowly. Although we do have a fairly sizable membership because a lot of these ideas are things that I had thought of. I'd actually considered an antenna design competition. The QRP rig was a new one that I had thought about. I did actually consider having the club invest some of this money in a USRP and possibly walking people through writing things for them, as some of the members of the club are actually working on a project, developing an additional front end for it. But a lot of these ideas were very helpful. Thank you. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to hold the repeater. So I just wanted to thank everyone that gave me some ideas, and I'll be listening as far out as I can.
Okay, very fine, Bob. You're mobile, I guess, and I think you said you're in Connecticut right now. Bob is associated with Worcester Polytech in Massachusetts, and I think you said the ham call letter there are Whiskey 1 Yankee Kilo. And so you've already considered antenna design. And the good news about antennas is that most of them, the raw materials are not expensive. And if you've got access to laboratory test equipment at Worcester Polytech, testing those antennas, both in the lab and out in the field, is a worthwhile project. And there's another good reason why antenna project is a good one, and that is, in my opinion, Bob, most colleges do a less than mediocre job of teaching the antenna science to their RF-oriented electrical engineering students. And that's even partially true at the master's level, certainly true at the bachelor level. to my knowledge, there is essentially no school in the United States that at the bachelor level can turn out an RF-oriented electrical engineer that could walk into a company and start doing antenna design. The people who are doing antenna design are, in general, people who have survived that Don Fields and Wave course, the Maxwell's Equation course. They've got interest in the subject, most likely the ham radio operators, and they've had something like 10 years or more of apprenticeship at a company that is doing that kind of work. That's how you get an antenna engineer. When it comes to computer science and engineering science, a good school can turn out a guy that can start becoming useful very soon. But in antenna design, commercially oriented, not true. So just learning the terms and the methods of measurement of standing wave ratio, field strength, pattern, front-to-back ratio, side lobe levels, aperture efficiency, aperture distribution, phase distribution, errors within the antenna, phased arrays. There's just a zillion ways you can do various experiments with inexpensive materials with doing antenna design. And on the assumption that you have some knowledge on how to do it, let me drop. It is likely you'll be teaching them something that the school will not be normally teaching them during the curriculum that's already set up. I have the impression that the first third of every course on fields and waves concentrates on the three-dimensional mathematics of rectangular, cylindrical, and spherical coordinate systems in Maxwell's equations in both the differential and integral form. And a heck of a lot of people who have taken this course simply memorized the stuff, never figured out what it meant, never had a chance to use it for the rest of their life. The only person I know of who enjoyed that course is a person who is a math major. And that person told me, yeah, I enjoyed the course, but I didn't have the vaguest idea what it meant in the field that they were trying to apply it to. So for traditional reasons, we keep teaching it that way, and that's not the way the real world works when it comes to antenna design. That's a bunch of opinions on my part, Bob. Now back to you for any final as you drive further into Connecticut. Your carrier was holding pretty well on that last transmission. KC2, Echo Mike Alpha, K2RIW.
Thanks,
Bob,
if I'm still holding it. I just wanted to say that pretty much the opinion we all share is that all of the entire electrical engineering department, at least RF-wise, is so wrapped up in the theory that they have no idea what actually works in the real world and the way things actually do it. They don't know how to do any of this, and I feel that a lot of the hams at my school have a better idea of how most of this works than they do. Unfortunately, most of those hams are leaving us as they've graduated and have become too old for the university. So thank you for all of your input. Thank you for all of your ideas. Hopefully we will get something built, and hopefully we'll see some of you on the air. Thank you very much, and I'll continue listening on
KCPMA.
Mobile.
K2EJ recognized. Glad you're here, Dan. And don't go away yet, Bob. Got a couple more words for you. But, Eric, go right ahead.
K2TTT. Yeah, I just wonder if you'd have any aversion to using, like, 1206 style power speakers. Just a lot of real good things, like, DCOs, multiple, digital oscillators, a bunch of really simple projects, but unfortunately you can't get leaded price, so they've got no aversion at all. There's a bunch of really good things you can do that's pretty simple.
When you get a chance, Eric, and you go to the website of amateurradio.tv and you hear what your audio sounds like as it's being recorded tonight, you're going to be a little bit disappointed. I'm not quite sure what it is, but your particular rig, which normally sounds high fidelity, when it's coming through the discriminator with its distortion tonight, copying what you're saying is a bit difficult, I'm sorry to say. Plenty of audio, not too much of it, but an awful lot of distortion is coming through. Maybe if you talk a little softer, it might improve. As you can tell, I'm going through the Western input. If I go through the eastern input, you can see what I sound like, and I can sort of understand myself, but as you can see, there's an awful lot of distortion there. Gordon, I think we want to make a further comment. Whiskey 2, Tango, 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 K2R, for you.
Better now, Dick.
Uh, Yes, I think I am hearing you. Gordon, go ahead.
Not double E. I'm not arguing against theory. Apparently, I'm very clear about that. But because of the way we teach, I'm wondering how many really good engineers drop out of the degree program and never become degreed engineers and never do something else. That, what creativity we might lose from observation. It's a loaded question, but I think I'll want to know that. Okay, I'm getting clear. Go figure, now I'm just in my RF background anyway, and it's 51 tomorrow.
Yeah, I think I see what you're asking, Eric Gordon. As I went through my particular college in New York City, I did see a number of students drop out of electrical engineering and go into industrial engineering because of the difficulty they were having with that DON course, the fields and waves course, electromagnetic theory, call it what you like. That course is a killer. Yes, it is basic information, but it is so basic, so many steps back from the way the real world works, that it is almost useless. It is almost not applicable. It is material that was derived by the physicists, and because the people who are now teaching it only partially understand it, they're afraid to make a change, and the curriculum demands that this so-called foundation be taught to the students. If, for instance, I was to give you a ridiculous example, if I was teaching computer science to a person who's going to be working with microprocessors and maybe making I can't even think of the word when you put multiple computers together, but writing the right kind of software, solving problems, whatever. You take a person who is working in the real world of computer science today, you could be giving him a similar foundation course in which you're teaching him how you start off with silicon material, how you refine it, how you do the doping of the various N and P materials, and how you actually manufacture the integrated circuits themselves. Except for a person who works in the foundry, that is too many steps back from the real world of where people are doing it. Part of what's going on here when it comes to the fields and wave course is that people who really like the industry of RF electrical engineering stay in that industry. The people who don't like it go back to teaching. So you're being taught and acclimated for an industry by people who basically did not acclimate themselves. It's a ridiculous situation, and I'm disappointed to see that I see no light at the end of the tunnel. I don't see any major correction taking place.
Time out.
Occasionally you'll get a ham radio operator in the student body who has his feet on real ground and can tell people what the real world is like. But still, everything he's going to say is so different from the curriculum that's being taught in the college. I got no good suggestion as to how to correct this situation. It appears to me that the educational process is not responding to the need. There are a very large number of wireless products being used in the United States right now. The American public just can't get enough of them. Every one of those products require antennas. There's never enough antenna engineers. A hell of a lot of the antenna engineering is being farmed out and outsourced because there aren't American engineers locally to do the work. Why do we tolerate that? Anybody with any further questions or comments on this particular subject, give me a call letters right now before we go on to the next person. I'm back on one of my favorite hobby horses, K2LIW.
Hey, Tuesday. Can you hear me now?
KE2EJ. Yes, I think I'm hearing you. I think you're coming through the eastern input.
Yeah, that's right. What I said before is that there's many good projects that they can do at the school that's relatively simple, but unfortunately today it's very difficult to get the lead in parts. So if they don't mind working with like 12 or 6 size components, it's not such a hard thing. It's just like dozens of really good simple stuff in the various QEXs that they could put together that are really worthwhile, like watt meters, reflectometers, digital oscillators, synthesizers, and all using just a few chips, but they're all service mounts.
Okay, I'll repeat what he just said, and that is the QEX magazine, the Experimenters Exchange of ARRL, has a number of very nice projects. Watt meters, reflectometers, synthesizers, and things like this. And if you're smart enough to use 1206 size surface mount components, the ones that are large enough that you can easily see them, then the project can be a lot of fun. I've been working with some commercial products these days where real estate on the printed circuit board is an extreme premium, and they're using 402 and 201 size surface mount components. When you see a bag full of those components, you would be absolutely positive you're looking at finely ground sand put into a plastic bag. Until you look at them under a high magnification of a stereo microscope while you're doing the soldering, and it takes an awful lot of skill to learn how to manipulate those components to put them in the right spot before you solder them down, there's a huge learning curve there. And so what Eric is recommending is that you choose 1206 size. 1206 means that 0.12 inch